Hi, everyone. Welcome to Looped In. This is the Houston Chronicle podcast all about real estate, the dirt, the deals, the people, the places. It's all here. I'm Nancy Sarnoff, real estate reporter with the Houston Chronicle, and I'm here today with Alan West. Hi, Alan.
Hey, Nancy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing real well.
So today on the show, we are going to be bringing back a topic that Looped In often returns to, Hurricane Harvey. But today we have a much different spin on the subject. So a few weeks ago, I was standing over by the coffee bar here at the paper, and I overheard our Metro editor, Diana Hunt, talking about a tour she takes people on when they come to Houston to visit. Turns out Diana's tour is a Harvey tour. She is joining us today to tell us where she goes, why she goes there, and what kind of reaction she gets. Diana Hunt, welcome to Looped In.
Hi, thank you very much.
So let's just
let's
just dig into this. Diana, now you are not from Houston originally. You've lived here for the past several years, and then you did a tour here in Houston before. You spent a lot of time in Texas. You are a Texan.
That's correct.
So what made you start taking people around to show them Harvey spots?
Yeah, let me just say, I lived here 14 years when I worked at the Houston Chronicle previously, so I was very anchored into the Houston community at large. Uh-huh. And then I was gone for 20 years, then I came back 3 years ago. So it's changed a good bit since I was here before, but there are a lot of familiar areas still there. This started because I had an aunt and uncle from Cape Cod visiting, and they had been very diligent in watching news and watching PBS and watching what was happening to Houston during Hurricane Harvey. And then they came to visit afterward, and I felt like I needed to show them what the real impact was, that just seeing it didn't quite convey the aftermath of what we were still dealing with here months and months later. And so I said, we're just going to go on a quick tour, and I'll show you some Harvey sites. And we started in the Meyerland area.
Okay, yeah.
And Bray's Bayou at that point, they were dredging. They're still dredging. I'm trying to deepen the bayou to give it a greater capacity.
Let me interrupt and just ask, when was this? How many months after Harvey was this?
This was probably six or seven months after Harvey.
Okay.
So it was a good ways after. It wasn't immediately after that. We still had, but there was so much still being dealt with and so much still not done.
Mm-hmm.
And then we drove up and down the streets in Meyerland and looked at the houses. You could still see through houses that had just been gutted. There were no windows, there were no doors. You could see from the front to the back. They had just been cleaned out because of the flooding. There were houses that had now been jacked up for 10 or 12 feet because they were going to rebuild, but they were going to rebuild at a higher elevation than where they were. You could see the teardowns. You could see the new construction. I think it drove home for my family what the real impact on a very united community could be and how one house might be okay, but three other houses wouldn't be. And they were fairly astonished, I think, to see in real time what the aftermath of something like that was. It's hard to comprehend 51 inches of rain until you see what the houses, what the neighborhood sustained at that point. And so from the houses, then we went back inside the loop a little bit, and we went by the synagogue that had been just completely destroyed. They managed to save a lot of the artifacts and the things they had inside, but they didn't save everything, and they decided it just wasn't going to be worth rebuilding.
Mm-hmm.
And so the religious community was also impacted, and that was a very visual, a very immediate explanation for what the impact was on a local community. And so we hit Southwest, then we swung around onto Interstate 10, went downtown, and looked at the theater district, the feet of water that ruined some really beautiful facilities. Didn't ruin them because they're fixing them up, but it was real devastation in downtown, how high the water was. You could still see water marks on a lot of the buildings. And to realize the streets we were driving on had been completely inundated, I think was fairly – and it was a nice way to say, hey, we've got a great downtown. Here it is, but look at all of this other stuff, and this is the impact. So we did that. We went by the courthouse. which is even today not fully operational. They've got some floors open, but they don't have every floor open. And then the jury room, I don't know what they're going to do with that. It's a water level facility, and I don't know if they're going to be able to save that. They're still debating.
Yeah, and that was not a brand new facility, but that was pretty
just
new.
Just a few years old.
Right.
Yeah. And then the courthouse, they have been talking about tearing that down now, right?
Right. They're trying to decide, is it worth fixing or do we just start over some other place that's not right on the bayou?
Right.
And I had experienced flooding in downtown Houston before. When I was here before, I went through Hurricane Alicia in 1983. So I've done hurricanes. The eye went over my house at that point.
Wow.
There was one year, I think it was not a hurricane. It was a tropical storm, but the downtown area, when the Chronicle was still downtown, the downtown area was marooned by the bayou. There was no flooding where we were, but it was completely encircled by water, and everyone got stuck downtown for an extra 8 or 10 hours until the water went down. So these are things that have happened over the years, but not anything really like Harvey. So from downtown, we went west again on Interstate 10. We saw the Greens Bayou, where it crosses under Interstate 10, was not far from where several people died. Mm. And you can look down at Greens Bayou today, and it looks just like a waterway. But when you think about it being over the freeway and over the roads, and people died in that waterway because it couldn't handle the capacity of water that was coming. And then we went by the ship channel up and over the bridge and talked about here's where the chemical plants started exploding after a few days. Here's where a storm surge of 12 or 14 or 16 feet, like a massive storm, would devastate not just the ship channel, but many of the refineries. And they're not really prepared for a big storm surge from a massive storm.
Mm-hmm.
We also looked at... We went down to Galveston. We split this into 2 days. We were going to go to Galveston anyway, because we always do that. But there was the Harvey element there, too. We talked about how Galveston did not take a direct hit. We pointed out the hotel where all the emergency management people stay, which is where we always put our reporter, because if the emergency management people are going to be there, we feel at least it's our—
Oh, that's where Carrie Blakinger was.
Carrie Blakinger was down there.
So where is that? What hotel?
Still San Luis.
Oh, the San Luis, okay.
Right. So we pointed that out, and we explained why we have a seawall and what happened in 1900 before there was a seawall, when the massive hurricane just destroyed the whole area. And then we take the ferry over to Bolivar.
Oh, wow. You did go.
We do.
Far,
we did. We had a little day of event. And Bolivar is very low, and it's a lovely area. But if you think about at high tide, the water is sort of splashing, the waves sort of splash over a couple of places of the roadway. And with a 5-foot storm surge, 10, 12-foot storm surge, there would be a lot of destruction. I don't think anything. It's very hard for me to comprehend what would happen.
Yeah.
That's a good time to discuss the Ike Dyke and the coastal
spine.
Coastal spine that is being proposed
and
what that would do. And a lot of folks on Bolivar are not pleased with that. And so there's a lot of policy discussion that can go around a nice drive out along the waterway. Then we come back through around and back through Interstate 10. So we don't take the ferry back, although you could always do that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the areas that we didn't do, I would suggest if somebody wanted to do this, to pick their own neighborhoods. A couple of neighborhoods we didn't go to is we didn't really go west to look at the dams, the reservoirs.
Right.
Highway 6 was completely underwater with reservoirs all around. Neighborhoods that were sitting in the flood pool behind the reservoirs were backed up. The Brazos River was something that was being watched the whole time. Is it going to breach the levees? Is it going to take down neighborhoods and cities? And the Brazos River has already had a fairly significant erosion. It's caused significant erosion in a lot of areas that had already been written about before that started.
Right. That is comprehensive.
Comprehensive.
I would say.
Depressing.
Yeah, very, very sad. Mm-hmm. So you've taken other people on this tour, or a version of it, I'm sure.
Right.
What have been some of the reactions that you've gotten? Is there maybe one thing in particular that you've noticed stands out to people when you take them or show them something?
I think there's a lot of silence. I think that
that's interesting.
There's a lot of just you know, the from watching it on TV, there was concern. And I have to say that my house did not flood. I live in South Houston, not the city, but the southern area of Houston, mm-hmm. along Sims Bayou. And we were really lucky. Sims didn't flood.
Yeah.
There was a little strip of area that didn't get the early bands of flooding from mm-hmm. Harvey. They didn't get those bands of rain. There was a little strip that didn't get that rain, and I happened to be in that little strip of area that didn't get much. So I think we got off to a fairly good start. So we'll start from my neighborhood and the bayou by me, and then as we got, I think the Meyerland area really, that's when everybody just stares and stares and stares and realizes the heartache and the devastation and the dollars and how the house they may have had for 50 years is never going to be the same. And even if they restored it, could you ever really think that that's going to be, it can never be the same again. Mm-hmm. So I think they realize that.
And that will continue to be a neighborhood that we as journalists watch, as a real estate reporter, one that I will watch because the character is just completely changing. There are certainly homes there that are being repaired, but so many, you know, so many more probably are being lifted or have been torn down and rebuilt, like you said, with some of these super tall structures. And it sadly, if it happens again and those homes flood again, the ones that are original, I don't think there's going to be any more life in them in terms of just the homes. I feel like there will be a point where they say, okay, these homes cannot be repaired.
We had a story in the feature section by one of the architecture writers here, who noticed that a lot of the mid-century modern homes were being changed forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, to put a mid-century modern home on a 12-foot wall really changes the character of the home. And so architecturally, it's going to be changed forever. I know folks are trying really hard to restore and maintain and protect, but it's really very different.
Yeah.
So I did notice a lot of, I think people realized how high, when we went by, I don't know if I mentioned, we went by Buffalo Bayou and we looked at the silt that's still there. And we looked at, here's how high the water was that left all the silt here. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a way for my family to envision the volume that was there. The photos, you can see the photos and you can see roads underwater, but until you realize that includes 30 feet of water or 20 feet of water, it's difficult to mm-hmm. visualize, I think. And my family is coastal residents, and so they understand they've had problems with erosion themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right. So as you've done these tours over the past year, year and a half, what have you noticed? What has stood out to you going by these places time and time again? Is there anything that has stuck out?
You know, Houston is a very resilient place. And I know that we've said that and everybody mm-hmm. says that, but it's very resilient.
Yeah.
They're really working at this.
Yeah.
They're trying, what can we do to save this neighborhood? What can we do to save my home? How can we deepen Bray's Bayou so more water doesn't pour into the neighborhood? I mean, there's lots of effort going on. I think it's a very slow process, and I'm not sure. I think there's still work to be done from Ike, and so from Hurricane Ike. And so how long will the Hurricane Harvey residuals still hang on here? But there are efforts going on, large and small. I feel like they're trying to come up with a big master plan, and we now have a big bond package that will help do some of the bigger projects, but it's going to be an effort, large and small.
Yeah, it's going to be take years, right?
Yeah, that's what's so interesting to me, too, is just, I mean, the silence that she described is really interesting, but that you're driving from downtown Houston to Meyerland to Bolivar speaks to the scale of what the entire region is facing.
Yeah.
And yeah, the coastal barrier is a response to a hurricane that happened 10 years ago. And we're still designing it,
right?
Much less building it. It's, you know, yeah. So scale plus time equals what do they say, tragedy, yeah.
Well, and the thing about Hurricane Harvey, as I said, I've been through hurricanes before, and this was not a direct hit. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't get the huge storm surge and the 150-mile-an-hour winds that you would get. We got a lot of rain, but we didn't get the high winds and storm surge that can be really destructive. Mm-hmm. And with a direct hit from a Category 5 hurricane, we'd have a 12, 14, 15-foot storm surge pouring into the ship channel over Bolivar into Galveston. I mean, there's just it's incomprehensible in a way what the potential is, and we have a chance to try to fix some things now before we get one of those.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, so before we started recording today, I asked Alan to do something, and I did it myself, and that's put together a list of places where we would take visitors to show them Harvey, you know, I hate to say Harvey landmarks, like that sounds like a positive thing, but places that resonated with us. The first one was a house that I've mentioned on this podcast before. I took a tour with a real estate analyst after Harvey of Meyerland and just that general area to see what the houses were like, the ones that were being rebuilt. And there was one on South Braeswood that he called, or we called, or someone called the Swamp Castle because it's so large. And I wrote about it, and we had a big picture on it, I think, on the—
It's kind of become an iconic image.
Yeah.
Post-Harvey image.
Yeah. Right, because it's a big, big house, you know, a mansion. You could call it a mansion. And it's built 10 to 12 feet above the dirt. And there's an elevator in the garage to get up to the first floor. And we took this picture with the couple who's building the house standing well beneath the first floor. And that's, I feel like that is a very strong image to illustrate what's happening to a lot of these neighborhoods. And we should say these are neighborhoods where a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people have the means to do something like that. There are plenty of neighborhoods where people are still living without walls, still living with mold, still living in a place, you know, in a place that's probably unsafe. So these were just some of the images that I remember seeing and reading about. And let's see, do you remember that sinkhole that, there were a couple, but yeah, on the Beltway, on the West Belt, just south of I-10, that was, whenever I drive over there, I always think about when I drive kind of under I-10, I guess, I think of how the water was above the homes. I mean, it was, you know, a lot of the freeways were like that, and they're meant to hold water. But I look at that, and I just think of the scale of how tremendous this was. So you mentioned the mid-century modern homes. That has been a story that has come back at really after every flood that we've had, because a lot of those neighborhoods have gotten hit. The one that I think of is one that I learned more about this time around, and that's Memorial Bend, which is over by I-10 in the Beltway area that we were just talking about, where all the streets are named for operas. And it was kind of it's a smaller neighborhood with a lot of really architecturally significant homes that have been demolished. And so I thought of this one this morning. The areas that are now being developed that are in the floodplain, like the Pinecrest Golf Course, which you could take someone and to see that. And that's surrounded by a neighborhood that was flooded. And that's quite a narrative, right, to tell what happened over there and how the developers bought that land. And, you know, they're moving forward with their plans to put houses on it. It's several hundred homes. And they're, you know, going to lift them up. And
of infill dirt.
They say that, you know, they're following the new guidelines, but the people around them are pretty upset. So anyway, there are a lot. And then, of course, the the convention center, which now looks beautiful and
yeah.
like it always had, even better probably. But that's where I spent most of my time after the hurricane. So I think to show people images of what it looked like, just with the people pouring out and the people inside. And so those are some of my thoughts. Alan, you want to share yours?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that we're all mentioning some of the same places. I mean, I had Meyerland first on my list.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned wanting to go to the Barker and Attucks dams, and I think that would be really interesting to maybe splurge on a helicopter and get up into the air just to see how massive they are to begin with, and then try to imagine them overflowing.
Yeah.
There was that much water.
Yeah, for sure. And then the neighborhoods that are... Yeah. That are right there, kind of within it, mm-hmm. right? In the flood pool, they call it, right?
Let's not also forget the Conroe Dam and the San Jacinto River, too. That's a whole other area,
right,
too.
I mean, Kingwood is another neighborhood that was really hit hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Pinecrest Golf Course was on my list as
it
well.
It was?
Yeah, because that's, you know, it's such an interesting story that in some ways captures a lot of the complexity with a city like Houston trying to be resilient. And, you know, Mayor Turner was vocal about suggesting that Harvey isn't dissuading people from wanting to continue to develop and invest in Houston. But it's a question, too. We don't have that much open green space that we could have used for detention. And so it sort of reveals some of the contradictions inherent in the city.
Your suggestions are making me think I need to develop a second tour, which is the Harvey Recovery Tour.
The Harvey Recovery Tour.
To see where the growth is going and is this really the smartest thing to do and what are the issues there. So
yeah, that's a great idea.
That could be next year's tour.
Right.
I think, maybe, you know, charge admission. We can rent a party bus. I think it'd be really fun. Or we could get Mr. McKinney's bus and use that. Another one that I had, well, I had a few. I thought, you know, in that Sunday that the storm first hit. I live in Midtown, which is, you know, far away from bayous, but it was completely underwater. And so I walked up this on-ramp, a 288 ramp, where some of my smarter neighbors had pulled their cars, which I wish I had done. But I think there's about 15 lanes of 59 and 288 right there, Midtown on the way to downtown, and it was completely submerged. And I would want to take somebody up onto that ramp and just say, look, and this was a lake, just to get them to envision the volume of water.
Yeah.
Far from any bayou. It was just that much rain and that much runoff.
Yeah, that's a good point. Any others?
Well, this is interesting because Councilwoman Amanda Edwards, she's doing like a canvassing tour in Kashmir Gardens, which was also hit really hard and faced a lot of sort of separate issues because it's right there on Hunting Bayou.
Mm.
And a lot of what you said, you know, people still living without drywall is true in that community. So it'd be interesting to see, to hear from her what sort of stories she gets.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, thank you for being here, Diana, and for sharing the stories of your Harvey tours. And I think it's really great that you're continuing to sort of spread the message of what happened and, like you said, what some of the recovery has been and what some of our options or what some of the proposals are. And it's obviously important to keep it on the minds of everyone and keep discussing it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Alan, thank you as well. Thanks for sharing your ideas.
Yeah.
And listeners, we hope you enjoyed the show and learned something. I certainly learned a few things. If you don't already, please subscribe to Looped In on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And if you would, please rate us and write a review. It helps other people find the show. I'd also love to hear from you. So if you have an idea for a show or just want to say hi, you can reach me on Facebook or Twitter. I am @NSarnoff. Thanks so much and see you next time.